So this is joint work along with my two advisors, Surgeon and David, from the ETH in Zurich. So this is a talk on secure deletion. And the question is, well, what is secure deletion? And we mean it to say that it's the security task of deleting information from a storage media, deleting data, so that when attempting to find this information at some later time, it is unable to be done. That when you delete this information, it becomes irrecoverable. And of course, because this is a security talk, of course, we have an adversary. And it suits our purpose as well to consider a coercive attacker. This would be a form of rubber hose cryptography. So in this sense, we have an attacker who, at some point in the future, will obtain not only our storage media, for instance, a smartphone such as this that has an enormous amount of private information, but as well be able to coerce us to reveal our passwords or passphrases, or simply be able to find it available in the RAM because the phone was not in a locked state. So secure deletion is a problem in general because of a simple file system optimization that has been done since file systems existed, whereby when you delete a file in a file system, for some level of abstraction, the only thing that actually changes is a flag is flipped that says, no, the file is not deleted, to yes, the file is deleted. The sensitive data, of course, still remains. Now, it has been studied and many papers have been proposed for a class of file systems and storage media called block storage devices. And these are things we're pretty familiar with, magnetic media and the FAT file system, for example. And there's a whole spectrum of solution space that I'm sort of omitting here, but in principle, when you can do something as simple as overwrite a sensitive file with zeros, then the solution is usually presents itself quite easily that you overwrite the file with zeros. Now, there's many complexities to this problem, but we won't be discussing these kinds of file systems in this talk. Instead, we're going to focus on log structured file systems. Now, log structured file systems differs from a traditional one because every time you make a change, it is simply appended to the end of the log. There's some sort of logical ordering of this of a log, and instead of actually writing in place, a log-structured file system always performs its updates out of place, invalidating the old copy of the data. So here, if we try to overwrite it with zeros, we instead see that there's a new version of this file that appears, while the old version, of course, still remains. So why are these file systems relevant? Are they relevant? Well, it turns out that this particular paradigm of file system is seen almost ubiquitous use for flash memory. And of course, flash memory has ubiquitous use in any kind of portable device. Because if you're carrying around data and there isn't a large spinning disk inside, then it's probably going to be using flash memory. And as such, we'll be using this kind of a paradigm. So YAFS, as an example, this is just one kind of file system that was originally used on the Google Nexus One phone. It is a log-structured file system, and a study has shown that data remains on the storage medium based on how big the file system is. So the more space you have, the longer it remains. And there's not even a guarantee that data will ever be deleted. If you stop using the device, it'll just remain available. So the reason log-structured file systems are so well-suited for flash memory comes from the actual physical property of flash itself. So flash is divided into two levels of granularity. We have a first, then a race block. This is about 128K, but of course it can vary. And these are in turn divided into pages. So with this diagram, I'm trying to indicate that each row corresponds to an erase block, and the square is a single page. Now, flash memory is non-volatile, which means you can have it store some data and it'll retain it even when you remove its power. And it does this by first filling all of the cells of a particular range, in this case an erase block, filling it with a charge. And this is a very brutal operation. It happens at this high granularity of an erase block, it takes a lot of voltage, it actually causes damage to the storage medium, but it allows all of the parts of this of the electronics in this erase block to hold a charge. When you actually want to write data later, you can then go and surgically say which bits should be drained of their charge. And the result is that you have zeros and ones, which ones have charge and which ones do not have charge. The caveat is that once you've written to a particular cell, you can no longer write again until you perform this erasure operation, because that's the only way that charge can return back to the cell of flash memory. And of course, erasures happen at this very large granularity. Moreover, erasures are costly. They consume more power, they consume more time, they cause physical wear, as I've mentioned, so it forms a very natural efficiency metric. If we have two solutions for secure deletion and one has fewer erasures, then in all other regards that they're equal, then of course the one with fewer erasures will be preferable. And as an extra note, erasures should also be evenly leveled. It's very inappropriate for Flash to only erase one particular segment while the rest of the device is more or less unused, because you'll see more wear occur here, and then that particular part will become what's known as a bad block and no longer usable. So here, we can mention a sort of naive approach for secure deletion. The general case is that an erase block will hold data for different files. It'll be an eclectic mixture of data that just happens to be written at the same time. And when you want to erase this sensitive data, but you still need to retain this otherwise valid data, the trick is you just duplicate this data to a different location. You write it to some unused erased location on the flash memory, and thus this invalidates the previous copy. The entire erase block is now invalid, and you can erase it. The problem with this approach, if we're going to use it as our means of ensuring secure deletion, is that it's very costly. If we want to perform an erase block erasure every time we delete a single page, the result is that we'll be copying 126 kilobytes and performing an erasure every time we delete even a single byte from our file system. So this naive approach is not suitable, and the goal of our work was to find something better. Now, as I've described the problem now, some ideas might come to mind of how to actually achieve some secure deletion. For one possible solution is, well, you could only delete sensitive files. You could say, this particular file is very important, it contains sensitive information, we only perform the naive solution for it, and the rest of the file system remains. Now, the problem with this is that from a usability perspective, now I'm not a usability person myself, but I can imagine through a thought experiment that being prompted when you're deleting an SMS, would you like to delete this SMS or securely delete this SMS, would not be a very usable solution. And on top of it, then you're relying on applications as well to properly set sensitive attributes for different files, and the user has to retain this mental model. Instead, it seems simpler to just say, everything is securely deleted. And if you want a little more precision, you can say, okay, I have an operating system here that is normal file system, I have user data over here that is securely deleted, and you can divide your system up that way. Another approach that has been suggested is to encrypt every file with its own unique key, store the key in the file header somewhere, that when you want to erase a file, you just erase this one erase block. So the concern with this approach is that first, the notion of a file can be somewhat vague. In a shadowing file system or a file system with deduplication or versioning, a file is just a pointer to a bunch of shared blocks. And as well, it's not always the case that you want to delete at the level of a file. For instance, if I had an SMS application, it's quite unlikely that every SMS is its own file. And yet I would want to be able to securely delete an SMS without having to uninstall the application to achieve this. A third suggestion that has been proposed is this: to drain the charge from the remaining cells. So as I was describing in Flash, when you want to program something, you drain away the charge so that you're left with some cells containing no charge, some cells containing charge, and why not just drain all of the charges? The problem with this approach is it lies outside the specification of flash memory. The manufacturers forbid it for some kinds of memory and otherwise discourage it. It can cause read errors in adjacent neighboring cells, and it tends to actually cause more problems with newer, denser, larger storage media, which the authors had originally observed. So in our work, what we want to achieve is that we get secure deletion that works within the specification of flash memory, that is guaranteed to work for all kinds of flash memory now and into the future, that is supported hopefully by manufacturers because it adheres to their specifications. We want it to be transparent for the applications and users. We don't want them to even be aware that their data is being securely deleted. We want them to delete an SMS and it be securely deleted without them expending any extra mental effort to achieve this. And of course, efficiency, small cost, space, memory, these sorts of things, so that it's not an unusable experience. So in sum, we want efficient fine-grained secure deletion, which we now present. Our two contributions. First is the data node encrypted file system, the NUVS. This is a general file system change. So you give me a file system and I give you a file system that has secure deletion as well. And our second contribution is UBFSSEC, which is the full implementation of our proposal for the Linux flash file system UBFS. So the intuition of our approach is that we have to perform an erasure to erase data from flash memory. This is a given. There's no other way to remove data from the flash memory. And as such, if we don't perform any kind of batching at all, we are left with a naive solution where every time we delete anything, we have to perform an erase block erasure. And this is not desirable. So with this in mind, the goal becomes we want to maximize the amount of data that is deleted per erase block erasure. And this can become our efficiency metric. And our solution is to encrypt every data node in the file system, where the data node is the atomic unit of read and write. That is, when you write, you will never write more than, or you'll never be able to read or more less than a data node. And we encrypt each of these with its own unique key. And then we take all of the keys and we co-locate them in densely packed a key storage area, or KSA. And then we take care to periodically purge the KSA to remove any deleted keys. So our system looks something like this. On the right, we have the main storage. This is the existing file system in its entirety. And it is a normal log structured file system. There's no extra secure deletion that we're adding. And here it's divided up into data nodes. These is just how the file system was originally structured. Our modification is by adding this KSA on the left. And you can see the KSA consists of a bunch of keys. Each key is very small relative to the data node, which would be about the size of a flash page. And for the KSA, we take great care to ensure that the data is securely deleted. And we do this by using the naive solution. So when we want to delete something, we copy all the keys we want to keep. We then erase the old version promptly. And the idea here is that the KSA is quite small relative to the main storage, and we can achieve more efficient secure deletion. So I'll walk through the write, read, and purging operations for denodes. So again, we have the main storage on the right. Each data node has a reference to its corresponding key to decrypt it. And suppose we want to write a new data node here, data node 3. The first step is to find an unused key. We find K3 suits our purposes. We encrypt the data node. We then tell the file system, okay, here is the encrypted data to write. And it writes it onto the storage media in where it would normally write the unencrypted version, along with a reference to the key that was used to encrypt it. Later, when we want to read, we figure out that we want to read data node 1. The file system index tells us where on flash it's located. It's located here. We read it. It tells us as well the key position. So we read the key position, decrypt the data node, and return it. And one thing I want to emphasize here is that encryption and decryption is happening right at the interface between the file system and the storage media. So there is no complications arising from the fact that we're adding encryption. In this sense, it's no different than having an error correcting code or applying compression to the data. The file system only ever sees data in its plain text, except right before and after it's being accessed from the storage medium. And of course, the users and applications have no idea that this is even being performed at all. For purging, we have the key storage area, and it's divided up into erase blocks, which is just a series of keys. On the left here, we have the key state map, which tells us which keys are being unused, which keys are being used, and which keys have been deleted. An unused key is fresh random data that has been already written to the key storage area, but has never been assigned to be used for any data node. A used key is some key that is currently being used for a data node that the file system considers valid in its internal index. And a deleted key is a key that was used at one point, but now the corresponding data node is no longer in the index, and it should be removed from the file system. So the first step is we read into RAM the erase block. Then, using the information from the key state map, we figure out that we need to replace certain keys. And finally, we perform an atomic update. Now, of course, flash memory doesn't support atomic updates. What we do is we write a new version of the erase block in one new location, update a logical reference to say now, if you're looking for KSA block 0, you can find it over here. Then the old version is promptly erased along with any other copies that that may have been made for wear leveling purposes. And then we iterate. So we go through the KSA doing the same. And one thing is to note is that we also replace unused keys as well as deleted keys with fresh random data at each iteration. At the end, we update the key state map to reflect that these deleted keys are now fresh. They're now unused random data. We can use them for new keys. So the keys are written ahead of time before the data nodes, and this is just for in case we lose power, of course, that we don't lose any data. So now I will introduce UBFSSEC, which is our secure deletion implementation for the UBFS file system. For this, I'll be presenting a bit of an abbreviated version. There's lots more details in the paper that go into some of the challenges we had along the way in our design, but it was more or less straightforward. First, I'll describe a bit about UBFS. So UBFS is a file system that accesses flash through this UBI layer here. So at the bottom, we have the raw flash memory, and this would be each rectangle corresponding to an erase block. And as I mentioned before, erase blocks can be bad if they've been worn out because of wear. And UBI has a notion of physical erase blocks called PEBs, which has in one-to-one correspondence with the actual raw flash memory. And instead, UBI exposes an interface called logical erase blocks. And this is just a simple logical remapping of the underlying flash memory. But it has the very nice property that it is, because it is logically referenced, it can refer to the same position as a LEB without it actually being in the same position on the storage medium. In particular, if you want to update a LEB here, such as LEB 0, which UBFS interprets as the super block, it can always be referenced at position 0, despite the fact that it may be anywhere on the storage medium underneath. As well, UBI takes care that bad blocks are never mapped to. It does this simply by having fewer blocks than the underlying storage medium. And so you can always write to and refer to a block by its logical number without being worried about wear leveling, without being worried about it becoming a bad block, and so forth. And it also offers a nice atomic update feature where you can say, take this logical erase block number and replace it with this new version, and then go through and delete all old versions of this logical erase block number, including any copies made for wear leveling purposes. Now, it didn't used to do that, but I wrote the patch and it's been pushed to the kernel, so now it does do that. So it is a feature of UBI. We made our modification. Basically, as I described, we added the KSA. There's some details I'm omitting here because we also have a checkpoint block for fast mounting after a crash. But more or less, it was straightforward. We add the KSA, we changed a few functions to how the data was represented on the underlying storage medium. In particular, UBFS uses compression. It was already compressing the data. All we had to do was also provide a key. If there was a key, then encrypt it after you've compressed it, decrypt it before you compressed it. UBI provided all of the features that we needed already, so it was just very straightforward to add our solution. We had a logically referenced key storage area. We had atomic updates with secure deletion. We had automatic wear leveling all taken care of for us by UBI. And as I mentioned, we integrated it with the checkpoint and replay mechanism. We considered all the crash cases. If you're interested in these sorts of systems-y stuff, there's lots of details in the paper. And as well, UBFS maintains an index of data nodes. When a data node is added to the index, we look at its key. We say, okay, now this key is used. When it's removed from the index, we say, okay, now the key is deleted. And this is all that we needed to do for managing the key states. So it was pretty straightforward in terms of the changes to UBI. We've fully implemented it as a single patch, which is available. As well, the author of UBFS has expressed interest in this, and I've been working with him. He's given me a branch on his Git repository where I've been adding incremental patches, but it's a bit of a slower process. As well, we've, of course, tested it in simulations. We have it running on this Nexus One phone, well, not this particular one, but one that is indistinguishable from it, and it was running just fine. We were using it as the normal data partition. And so we did some measurements and simulations as well. These numbers we took from observed writing behavior. We had a model of how the Nexus One was writing during normal usage. And when we changed the file system to UBFS, standard UBFS, we observed a write frequency of about 21 erase blocks per hour. And using some simple conversion to based on the specifications for Flash, we come up with an expected lifetime at this consistent writing behavior. And what we see here is, of course, this corresponds to the frequency that we perform the purging operation, whereby we have secure deletion and we have a classical security knob, a trade-off knob, where we can go between increased amount of wear as well as increased security. And the user can, of course, just pick the point on the curve where they would prefer or have it picked for them by the manufacturers. As well, importantly, the amount of additional wear is not orders of magnitude, except maybe in the case of 1 minute. So it's still within a reasonable time where we expect the lifetime of the phone to exceed perhaps even that of the owner. Here we have some measurements of our throughput and power consumption for the standard file system YAFS that was running on the phone, the stock UBFS implementation, as well as our modification. We wanted to make sure that the power consumption wasn't being wildly used because of all the encryptions that were being performed, and as well that the read and write rates were still quite reasonable, that we could expect to use it as an actual phone, and the result was yes, it is quite reasonable. One thing that we observed is that the difference in read rate and write rate for UBFS and UBFSSEC has nothing to do with the actual encryption, but it's only because we have to read a key on the storage medium. And so after we saw these results, we reasoned that, well, actually, when you are performing a purge, you have in RAM all of the keys available at the time. You're writing them to the storage medium. There's no need to then go back and read them again. You could cache a handful that you would expect to need in the next interval and use them then. So we can definitely improve these rates. These are just for the basic implementation that we did, and we observed that, yes, it is efficient enough to use, and it is quite reasonable. So in summary, we have shown that secure deletion for flash memory is not a straightforward solution. There's no straightforward solution for this. But we have, to that end, proposed denoves that achieve secure deletion by the periodic purging of a small key storage area. We've implemented it. We've implemented it in full for UBFS and to include our design. A couple extra notes as well. So in this talk, I was referring to flash file systems. Many other ways of accessing flash are SD cards, USB sticks. These implement a log structured file system, but they do so by means of a proprietary controller that is developed by the manufacturer. These controllers tend to be extremely private to the manufacturers because it is the only real way that they compete among themselves. And so as a result, they're closed. However, there's given the criteria of the actual controller along with the specifications that Intel has released for one particular implementation, there's no reason why UBFSSEC or rather denevs couldn't be integrated into these as well. It's just a matter of whether or not manufacturers would be willing to include it, and hopefully this could be the case, especially showing that yes, it is feasible and works and provides secure deletion for flash memory. Finally, as an interesting note, so we use a lot of encryption. We're encrypting all the data, but this is not an encrypted file system. We're only using encryption as a compression technique. We're taking the amount of erasures that we need to perform to delete data, and we're reducing it through encryption by only deleting these small keys. But a consequence of our design is that it's now almost trivial to extend it to an encrypted file system. The only change we need to make is to encrypt the KSA. We have a root secret, we derive a key, we encrypt the KSA with this key, and when we're already decrypting 2 kilobytes of data, the additional 16 bytes to decrypt the key is completely dwarfed by it. So we get an encrypted file system at almost no additional cost. And with that, I'll be happy to take some questions.
So we have plenty of time for questions.
Hi, I'm Dave Barry from Boeing. And The question I have is, how difficult is it to access that log system data that you, or log file system data that you've kind of walked away from and you're kind of worried about it being left behind?
So for the case of this phone, it's completely trivial. You need to have root access, which you can get, and then when you do, you just say cat /dev/mtd/mtd block 4 or whichever partition you want, and you redirect it to a file, copy the file to your computer, and there you have it in its entirety.
Thank you.
Mike Friedman, Princeton, I very much enjoyed the talk. I guess with some of the performance numbers being good, it perhaps makes my question less important, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You start with the straw man that seemed to suggest this naive copying of data would be very inefficient because you need to do it each time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the threat model you're posing is losing your phone, so I immediately thought, well, you actually don't need this every time. You could run this in the background, and you know, what you're actually doing is marking them as deletion, putting a tombstone, and kind of running a disk defragger, which, by the way, is what LFS really needed in the first place when it was doing it. And later on, it turned out that cleaning the KSA was also just occasionally purged.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does seem like you have this periodicity where you're only secure between the periodicity. So I guess it goes back to my original question, is why does that straw man fail in the sense that you don't need to do all this copying each time, which is what your where levering is. You just need to do it every, you know, 60 minutes as you kind of defrag your file system.
It's true. So if you have a very large file system, you can then just fill the entire capacity as a user. This was some research from Asia CCS. And this the result would be, yes, it would take a lot of time because you'd have to erase every single erase block. Because when you're using the file system, you can have deleted data basically appear in any particular part of it. And then the result would be, okay, say 100% of the erase blocks you have to erase. And with this, we would delete 1%, or in UBFSX's case, it's 0.4% of the erase blocks on the storage media. So there is the benefit, is about 200 times versus...
So you're saying that in the workloads, that the number of, the size of the erase data is significantly smaller than the size of the erase block, and there's going to be significant overhead. I'm not sure I understand your explanation, but we just take it offline. But there's not... that you're going to be erasing a lot of valid data and it's going to be a where leveling problem?
No. So when you want to erase an erase block, in the worst case, you would have 63 or 2 to the power minus 1 other valid pages that you have to copy to a new location. So if you wanted to erase an erase block of about 128K, you would copy 126K somewhere else and then perform the erasure. And this would be the naive approach. So I guess what you're saying is that, well, we don't have to do that. We can just wait 20 minutes or an hour, however often.
Right, exactly.
And then perform it for all of the erase blocks that have happened to accumulate some erasures. And yes, I mean, that is also another solution. I guess it's not as naive as the naive solution, which would really be, okay, we want to erase this, so we erase it. But I think that the KSA approach would be simply smaller because the KSA would always be 0.5% or 1% of the storage media.
Gotcha.
As a whole. So there'll always be fewer blocks that you have to erase.
Okay, I guess I was just asking because the that not so naive is actually how LFS and MOSI system did reclaiming disk space.
Exactly. So all these log structured file systems do this approach. However, they don't do it naively. They do it with a heuristic, and the heuristic is generally do the erase block that has the fewest amount of pieces of data that I actually have to copy somewhere else. And this, of course, does not have a security component to their heuristic.
Thank you.
Hi, Albert Wong from Google. So I was listening to what you were saying here. I was thinking, have you thought at all about trying to expose this on, create kind of a virtual block device on top of this kind of thing? Then you could kind of just stick any kind of file system on top. It doesn't have to be a log structured one. And you kind of got similar properties.
Actually, this was something that I had occurred to me after I had implemented it. So I guess a little too late. But I was looking at Ubi and I was thinking, oh, I could have also just added it to Ubi. And then any file system built on top of Ubi would also have this. The problem there is that if you still want to have efficient features like rapid mounting after it crashes, you're going to have some information about the file system. So either you store which keys have been, which keys are used and which keys are deleted. You need to maintain the state. And if you don't want to do a full scan, you'll have to keep it in a checkpoint and then have a journal, and then it sort of becomes almost like a file system in itself. But yeah, the idea of including it somehow in Ubi had occurred to me.
Thank you.
Dan Farmer. What happens if there's a corruption in the KSA, you know, loss of power or damaged block? Do you keep the KSA in memory all the time? Do you do any kind of secret delete in RAM as well or not?
So for the KSA, if you lost some aspect of it, it would be pretty bad. And as a result, you would be able to duplicate it if need be, or like run it in some sort of RAID, because obviously it is a critical component. But thankfully, it's small enough that we can simply duplicate it. As for keeping it in RAM, the only time that it appears in RAM is one particular buffer that's kept in the key map area, where when you're performing the purge, you read the KSA in its entirety, but you read it iteratively, erase block by erase block, and then when it finishes, the memory is poisoned.
Thank you.
So, two questions. You mentioned that the KSAs were created randomly when the machine starts up.
Mm-hmm.
Since this is primarily going to be used in embedded devices, can you talk about the low entropy issues in embedded devices and how that could potentially affect keys that are being created?
Of course, yes. It would be quite a bad thing if there's no true source of entropy, and there was a talk earlier today that discussed about this. There was a paper that I read quite recently, but I think it's a year or two old. It's called Accelerators and Randomness Perfect Together, or something to that effect. And accelerators are marvelous devices that have come down in price from when they were first used to deploy airbags to now they're just in simple toys. And already there's six or so accelerators on this device that can generate as much randomness as you need. The authors of the paper found that even a deliberate attempt to make the accelerators report a particular value in randomness completely failed. And as well, even sitting on a table, it would still be able to generate sufficient randomness. So it is a concern for in a device that doesn't have an accelerator, but it is such a cheap device, and for this purpose, security critical, that in my mind, I just would imagine they would add it. That it would of course be necessary, or rather, if it could get randomness from a host, it could also get randomness from a host in the same way it is issued trim commands for an FDL. It could be issued out of band. But yes, you raise a good point that it is quite necessary for true randomness.
Lots of devices make that mistake in the embedded space. So, next question was, you mentioned 128-bit keys. I assume you're using AES for this. How is IV handling done?
So IV handling is done by not needing to have an IV. So we're using counter mode, and we only use each key once for one particular piece of data, after which it is discarded. We never encrypt more than a data node, and when we decrypt, we always decrypt the entire data node. So in a sense, it's not one key with many IVs, but rather it's just many, many, many keys, and then we don't need the IVs. We just start them at zero and use them once.
Okay.